Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Welcome, everyone. Travel with us today to magnificent Malta in our advanced class. This is Doris Broom, Peng Meng Hui, inviting you to join with
Bill Quinn
and Lois Fisk
as we talk about a place called Magnificent Malta. Magnificent makes it sound like a really great place, doesn't it?
It sure does. It draws your attention in and you want to read about Malta, Doris.
But then it says, Little Malta's history far outweighs its size. So first it's magnificent and yet it's little. So little things can be great.
Yes, it can be, and they can be great. This is a tiny island when you look at all of Europe, but it has an incredible history, Doris. Just goes back thousands and thousands of years.
Bill, you might not believe this, but I've actually been to Malta.
You had mentioned that, and I was like, wow, you've actually been there? What? How did you end up in Malta?
Well, I would never ordinarily even think of going to Malta, but there was a big kind of an international conference there that had to do with multimedia and radio and TV, and I was a delegate there. And we went to Malta, and I would never have gone there otherwise, but I'm so glad that I had that chance.
Sounds excellent to me. It's a place, actually, Doris, I've always wanted to go.
Really? Well, now you've had friends that have lived there.
Yeah, that's partly why. You know, our friends lived there, Doris, for over a year, had three small children there, and they had quite the experiences while they were living there. And just a couple of years ago, they took all three of their teenagers by then to see Malta and to see where they had lived. And it was very exciting.
Wasn't that good? Well, you know, the people that live in Malta, do you know what we call them?
Maltese.
Right, Maltese.
Whoa, that sounds like a candy I know.
Well, it sounds like a dog, too. There's small dogs, you know?
Well, it makes me even think of, there was a book, The Maltese Falcon.
That's right.
That's right.
That's true. Well, I found out that the people that live there are quite short, usually. There's so many short people that you feel like kind of like a giant when you're there. But the Maltese people are kind of like, in a way, like the Filipinos. They go all around and work in different countries. And so they said Malta exports people because they go down to Australia and New Zealand and every place.
Mm-hmm. And other parts of Europe, right?
Yeah, very interesting people there, the Maltese people. So we'll find out more about Malta. You've probably never even thought about Malta, Bill.
Well, you know, it's funny. I liked geography when I was growing up in school, and I loved studying countries and things. I would love looking at a map of Europe, and you would find plenty of these tiny countries there, San Marino, Andorra, Liechtenstein. And actually, I did know about Malta. I was like, wow, this tiny little island is a country.
Right. Well, you'll have to go there someday. And
I think this
article will make people interested, don't you?
Definitely. And I think when they read more of our article, they'll really get into it and they'll want to do some research on their own, Doris.
So we should start reading. It's on page 16 today. We're going to read the first couple of paragraphs and we're going to find out more about Malta right now.
Magnificent Malta. Little Malta's history far outweighs its size. The danger of going to Malta for a relaxing vacation is that a history lesson might break out. Frankly, the place even exceeds the limits of history because we don't really know a lot about those people who built temples here that predate the pyramids by about 1,000 years. The people we do know about made the two main islands of Malta a destination as soon as mankind learned how to float boats in one direction. Its desirability for navigation makes sense because it sits nearly equidistant from each end of the Mediterranean. But Malta's history is not all ancient. It was such a strategic aggravation to Hitler because of British guns and aircraft that he did his best to reduce these chalky limestone islands to gravel with bombings several times a day during World War II. Because war has so defined the place, the warmth of the Maltese towards strangers is all the more amazing. If you're lost, I know for a fact that they will gladly help you get found, and they will do it in English, thanks to a British past dating back two centuries. Though now, it's an independent and also Maltese-speaking country.
Well, the opening sentence here makes it sound like something could happen. When they said a history lesson might break out, just kind of really means that it might happen. You might find out more about something in history, and it might happen when you're there. It's right in the middle of a lot of things going on there in Europe.
Right. It's in southern Europe, Doris. Lots of history, lots of ancient history, and there will be a history lesson if you want it, that's for sure.
Well, it's right in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea.
That's right.
Right. Now, I want to explain something to our listeners here, Doris. We said the danger of going to Malta. Now, this is just kind of a
almost not really like a danger.
It's not really a danger. In fact, it's just saying the possibility of actually something good happening. So that's
or
what we
interesting
mean by that.
Even.
Interesting. Yeah. Right. So,
because you might say, well, I'm just going to go there and relax and not do much.
Yeah.
But something might be going on. It yeah. could be an international conference. It could be some big musical thing. And you say, well, I'm not going to relax. I'm going to take part in that. So, in other words, don't count on relaxing. You might have too much to do there.
Might shake your world while you're there.
Yeah. Well, in here, a history lesson might break out. And it's not like you're going to be, you know, you're imagining you just might be walking down the street and then suddenly there's something really interesting that happens very suddenly and unexpectedly.
But, you know, when you get to history, there's so many things we don't know about history. We know some things, but it exceeds the limits of history because there's some things there that we don't even know about, the real early history.
Right. You know, Doris, I did not know this about Malta, and maybe you and Bill didn't know either. Didn't know about the temples that predate the pyramids by about 1,000 years. That was shocking to me. I had no idea.
I know what I think about the pyramids being one of the oldest things you want to see in Egypt. But 1,000 years before that, they had this stuff going on over there in Malta.
Well, that's why we say here the place even exceeds the limits of history because the pyramids, the Great Pyramids in Egypt, they were actually constructed about 2,500 B.C. And so what we're looking at is there are temples in Malta that might have been constructed approximately 3,500 B.C., which is on the limit as far as how far we go back as far as understanding history.
That's right, right. And, you know, all of us have been kind of taught, well, the pyramids are the oldest man-made creation on Earth, and they've lasted and all. And then all of a sudden you find out about this temple, and you're like, wow, how come I never knew this?
Right. And we don't know everything about it, but we do know that as the history goes way back. And we also know that the two main islands of Malta, it's a destination now that people often wanted to go to. It says they learned how to float boats in one direction. In other words, it's an island in the middle of the sea, and that's where the ships go.
Yeah. Actually, that's that section right there, float boats in one direction, just simply means really the beginning of when human beings set sail on the water.
Well, you know what? You'd be really surprised to know that it's a place that's even mentioned in the Bible.
That's right, Doris. In fact, when I was doing some of my research, and we'll come to those sites a little later, I found out that the St. Paul or the Apostle Paul arrived there in 60 A.D.
You said arrived there. Do you know how he got there? He was shipwrecked.
Yeah, yeah.
He was shipwrecked, and that's where he landed. And I was right on the beach where they said this is where Paul was rescued when their ship was wrecked, and they came up there. So he was shipwrecked. That's how he got there. Isn't that something?
Well, and as we know how things turned out, it was the right thing. It was a fortunate thing for him, actually.
It was,
yeah.
Right. So we'll find out more about that. And there's some places named after them. Mm. St. Paul, St. Paul's Cathedral.
Exactly.
Even have a St. Paul's Bar over there. Everything's named after him. Funny, you know.
St. Paul's Bar.
That's funny.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, the thing that's good about it is the desirability means the thing that makes people like it. That's desirability for navigation makes sense. Why does it make sense that it's such a good place for navigation, Bill?
Well, because it sits nearly equidistant from each end of the Mediterranean, Doris. So now what we're talking about, when we say equidistant, that means if you go east, if you go west, the distance is going to be the same.
So if you have a kind of a boat trip or some kind of a yacht you're on, you could go one way and go back to Malta and then go the other way. Mm-hmm. It's kind of right in the middle of everything.
Yeah. You know, I might even say if I'm driving from New York to Los Angeles, I would say St. Louis, Missouri is equidistant. It's right in the middle of the country.
Bill, that's not really a good example because that's on land. We're talking about the water now, Bill. Come on. No, if you were on land, that would be it. But on a ship, then you'd be right there, wouldn't you? Right in the middle of the ocean. You know,
okay.
Mediterranean Sea.
If I was going to swim from Taipei to Hainan, I would stop by
that's
Hong Kong.
Better. That's better. That's
All
better.
Right,
but
there
that's
you go.
Good. Yeah. But, you know, the Malta's history itself of the places that we're going to talk about, of these towns, is not quite that ancient.
That's right. And actually, we find out a little bit about its history that is more recent history because Hitler had a plan for this island.
Well, why was that? Why was Hitler interested in it?
Well, we see here it was a strategic aggravation to Hitler.
He didn't like it.
You know, during World War II. And now when we mean strategic aggravation is that an aggravation is something that bothers you. It's something that persists and you try to get rid of that aggravation. It makes you very unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he was unhappy because the British guns and the aircraft were using that place. And so actually they tried to use that to have their bombs to go off to fight against Hitler. And it was kind of, in a sense, way, like places like Taiwan, they're kind of the aggravation to people fighting around in the area. It's you know.
Yeah. Well, during World War II, actually, the early part of World War II, the Germans actually did, you know, spread their invasion down through northern Africa. And they, you know, had troops and tanks and airplanes in northern Africa. So it meant they had to fly over this area. Well, the British actually did have possession of Malta at this time, and so they were using this to shoot down some of the German aircraft. That's why Hitler found it
like
an aggravation.
Yeah,
that's right.
Not only that, he wanted to get rid of it.
Exactly. It was a strategic place for the British. They were very smart to be there.
But it's a good thing that that place wasn't bombed because they had so much history and historical things there, Bill.
Well, it is a good thing. So, yeah, he tried his best. We see here he tried to reduce these chalky limestone islands to gravel with bombing several times
a
day.
I mean, they didn't bomb the most historical parts. They bombed, but they didn't get the main part of all those old things like the opera house and all. They're still there.
My guess is that the gun turrets were set up in remote locations, maybe closer to the ocean, maybe on some rocky cliffs, things like that. They're not going to set it up at the top of St. Paul's Cathedral.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
But because the war has it so defined, the warmth of the Maltese people towards strangers is kind of amazing. You'd say, well, we don't want strangers here. But they're not that way. They're very friendly.
No, in fact, Doris, you would think that maybe there was a distrust there for people possibly from other parts of Europe, but it doesn't seem to be that way.
No. Because they're very, very warm towards the strangers. And what does it say about that, Bill?
Well, for instance, say you are a stranger visiting and you are lost. Well, our writer says, I know for a fact that the Maltese will gladly help you find your way.
And the good thing about it is they'll do it in English. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have to keep up your English.
Exactly, because we find out here, thanks to a British past dating back 2 centuries, that's why English is established there and it's been kept up because it is the language of commerce, it is the language of tourism, and it is the language of transportation.
Right. They do actually have their own language, the Maltese language, but they still speak a lot of English there.
Well, this is a crossroads, we would say. It is an island, so you're going to be by air or by boat. But it is a crossroads because of the location, north to south, and backwards and east to west. And my guess is over the centuries, they had so many people coming and going. They got very used to visitors. And it's interesting. In a place like that, the native people, they're used to it. They're not threatened so much when people do come through. So when you came there for your media conference, you didn't threaten them.
Oh, no. They were just very, very friendly. But, you know, there's a lot of places along the Mediterranean Sea, many beautiful villages and cities, and people like to invite people for conferences. It's good for business and all. But the thing about Malta is they spoke English, so a lot of people said, well, let's have the conference in Malta because you can get around easily and people speak English. So that was a good selling point for them to have more conferences there.
My friends that lived there had no problem. They both just had English, so did their children. They were there for 14, 16 months. They didn't have any problem with communication.
No. So that's kind of an interesting thing to know, that you go over there to Europe and you can use your English. So that's one good selling point for it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And if you just look at, I'm going to tell our listeners to take a look at that map at the top of page 16.
Not only our listeners, our readers. I hope you have the magazine, because then you can see the pictures, Bill.
Yeah, it's better if you do have the magazine.
Right.
You can see what we're talking about. Look up there and you can see Italy, and then there is Sicily, the big island next to Italy, and then there's Malta. We actually, you know, we point to the small island of Malta, then we actually enlarged it just so you can see Malta, what it looks like. But it's south of Italy, and then further south of Malta is Libya and North Africa.
And let's not forget, readers, you have your magazine there on page 16 to look at the Malta Tourism Authority site we have there at visitmalta.com. You don't want to miss that site either.
You looked that up.
Yes, and there's something else we looked up, but we're going to talk about that later, Doris.
Okay, so check out these websites. I'm sure you'll find them interesting. And when you go to Malta, like I stopped in Greece on the way so I could just see Athens at the same time, and you can see things on the way there.
What did you do? Did you take a plane from Athens to Malta?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Oh, okay. How long was that?
Didn't take very long. It was just a short trip.
About an hour or
so? Maybe 40 minutes.
Not very long.
Yeah.
I thought you would have kind of tried to relive Paul's journey and see if you could shipwreck on the coast.
We did have a conference to attend, Bill.
She can still do that, you know. She's so young at heart. She can still do that.
But
I'll go with you, Doris.
No, what we did do, though, we went around to some of the concert halls, and we had beautiful symphony concerts in these places. You felt like you were going back to very early days in history when people like Beethoven lived, because the concert halls are just so quaint looking. And you sit in there and you feel like you're in another world.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I'm sure. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I think we better finish reading about the lay of the land, a little bit more about where it is, and then tomorrow we can talk even more about some of these places. So let's read on and finish this part on the page 16.
The Lay of the Land. Sitting 60 miles south of Sicily, the nation of Malta is about 122 square miles, the size of Omaha, Nebraska, most of that on Malta, the biggest of the stunningly deforested handful of islands. Although its 408,000 people make it the most densely populated nation in the European Union, the main island actually has enough countryside to get lost in, if you're driving, which I was. I rented a walled villa in one of the oldest cities, Zurich, pronounced like Zurich, because I wanted a more genuine Maltese experience and not one more urban European visit.
I find that this article is written in a way that we can understand it easily. There's an awful lot of very common expressions in here, and I think one of the expressions is the lay of the land. Bill, if you're going to go someplace, I'll say, well, give me the lay of the land means tell me more about what it's like there, generally speaking.
Yeah, I just want to get like a summary of what the experience is. I want to get a lay of the land. That means, all right, what does, you know, how high do the mountains go? Or maybe, you know, are there plains? What are the streets like? What is the city
kind
like?
Of geography.
Just get a feel for things.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a lay of the land. Give me a feel for things.
Yeah, I was thinking like terrain? You know, is it rolling? Is it mountainous? Is it flat? That's what I think of when I think of the lay of the land. I want to know what my car is going to have to do while I'm there.
Right. So it tells you kind of where it is. It's situated only 60 miles south of Sicily. And Sicily is also another very interesting place.
I haven't been there, Doris, but I hear they have good food.
Well, they have good food all over Europe, too. But the nation of Malta, the country, is very small. It's about the size of Omaha, Nebraska. Now, that's not very big for a country.
No, I've been to Omaha, Nebraska. That's not a very big place, Doris.
No?
No, well, Omaha, Nebraska, of course, being in the north central part of the United States, very rural, very flat, certainly not a big city. So that kind of defines how small Malta is.
But it's bigger than some of the other islands around it because it says the Malta is the biggest of what they call the stunningly deforested handful of islands.
I love that word, stunningly.
I don't like deforested, though.
No, I don't like that,
they cut
but
down
I love
all
the word
trees.
Stunningly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very outstanding, but they cut down too many trees, right?
Well, I think if you want to get a good feel for deforested, just look at that picture there in the bottom right corner of page 16, and that'll give you a feel. Again, it's limestone. That is one of the basic, you know, components in their rocks there. And they just don't have a lot of vegetation. So that's what we mean by deforested. It almost looks desolate, you might say.
It's more of a fishing place than it is for the other types of things. But it says it's one of the biggest of the islands. And about how many people live there?
It said 408,000 people, which was surprising to me. With the fact that it is an island, it seems to me like it has a lot of people there.
Yeah, but that's not really very big for a country, though.
No, but I guess some island countries that are that small, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, it is because it is crowded. It's a lot of people for a small area because we see it as the most densely populated nation in the European Union.
How interesting.
It has the most people per square kilometer of all of the nations there.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Well, in order to get around, you say, how are you going to get around? If you want to find the lay of the land, you have to go out and look at it.
Well, you have to get out and look at it, and there's several ways to do it. You can actually drive, and surprisingly, the main island does actually have enough countryside that you can get lost if you are driving.
But this person says, well, I'm not going to stay in a hotel. What did he do?
He stayed in a walled villa. Now, how amazing is that? How many of us would want to do that? I know, for one, you could count me in on that, Doris.
You rented one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, rented one. That would be kind of fun. And this place, the way they spell it is sort of more like an Arabic kind of spelling with a Q at the end, but it's kind of pronounced like Zurich in Switzerland.
That's right. It is Doris. And I was also going to say, when we were talking about the driving, I forgot to look this up, readers. Find out what side of the road they drive on, because I have a feeling they don't drive on the same side of the road as North America does.
Well, most of the people in Europe don't, really.
Yeah.
We in America, we say they drive on the wrong side of the road, but that means the opposite side.
Yeah, opposite side of the road. I'm thinking they might drive on the same side of the road as Britain does.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would advise any of our listeners or readers from Asia, if they do go there, don't drive.
Don't drive.
I would recommend that you don't drive. It's probably going to be on the left side, and you will be totally confused.
Yeah, besides that, you don't know where you're going and look. There's other ways to get around.
Exactly.
They have tour buses, and they have
services. Hire a driver, right?
Right.
That's a good idea.
The writer here, a writer has kind of an interesting approach in this article. I would say a little bit of an edge our writer has, a little bit of an attitude about things, because Ross Werland finishes this day out by saying, I wanted a more genuine Maltese experience and not one more urban European visit. And I just want to explain for our readers and listeners that he's just saying, you know, not like all of the famous tourist spots.
He wants
all
to be
of the
local.
Right. He wants something. He wants a real feel, not the touristy feel.
Now, some people are uncomfortable with that, Bill, too, because, you know, it all depends. You're not used to it. So it's okay either way.
Yeah. But, you know, Bill makes a good point here. If you have friends who have been there before, or maybe even have friends who are living in Italy, maybe they'll be, you know, totally into exploring Malta and not just staying right in the busy central part of Malta where all the city, the urbanization is and everything.
But, you know, when you say this urbanization, it's actually, when you look at the picture on the next page, you can see it's not really very urbanized in that sense. I mean, it just looks like an old town in Italy or Zurich or any place. It doesn't look like it's urbanized in a way because it's very old style.
Yeah, because you notice, Doris, you're referring to there's no high rises, right? Or skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
Well, not only that, look at the way they build, you know, with these little the buildings going like porches outside, and it's just very European classic. It's not modern at all. It's not these sleek, plain buildings. This is old style.
Mm-hmm.
And you beautiful. Feel that when you walk around there.
Yeah, I mean, when you were there, did you have a chance to walk around, go to some of the marketplaces?
Sure. We went all around to visit all these places. They had drivers take us around and to see things. Went to a concert, went down to the beach and saw the fishermen. And, you know, you can get around easily without driving yourself. I would suggest that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But are there some other good words we might want to talk about? I think that's the main thing today, isn't it?
Well, I think that is the main thing for today. I do want to mention something to our listeners, Doris, that if you do have a chance, go to our webpage, www.studioclassroom.com, and you can see our topic talks on Malta. And also, we would be curious to hear if any of our listeners and readers have been to Malta. So you can let us know by letters at studioclassroom.com or go to our Facebook page.
And I'd sure like them to let us know if now, after seeing this article and reading it and appreciating our magazine, if they're planning a trip to Malta.
Do you want to try to join them, I think, the way you sound?
I think so. You can write me, Lois, and tell me what's happening.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today, and we'll talk about Malta for the next couple of days. So look up some things on the web ahead of time, and be sure and be here on time tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye.